This is Level With Her, a podcast of in-depth conversations with video game greats. And this is the conclusion of my in-depth conversation with Quest for Glory co-creator Lori Cole. You're taking a completely different kind of risk with Summer Days at Hero U as opposed to Rogue to Redemption. You're going full kawaii. You are going super cute. It's almost going back to your roots in that way. The pink is back.
It is so cute. It is so attractive and appealing, and I love it. It's a totally, and why I went that way is because basically I saw Dream Daddy.
It was Dream Daddy. Okay.
It was Dream Daddy that was the moment that said, I can do something totally different and get away with it. Because this game, if this game can do it, I can do it. I mean, I can go with a style that is appealing visually and create a different kind of game. And Monster U and some of the other ones that
had different
rules. These things had different styles that really said, I know how to tell a game in that style.
And
wanted to do that.
Because you're really limiting yourself in how, like you said, players need challenge. Players need problems to overcome. You're really limiting yourself in this regard. It's much more like a Japanese style adventure game than what most people consider now, because it's like what adventure games were before Quest for Glory.
Yeah, it really is. I have never actually created a straight adventure game in my life. I've always done a role-playing style game that got incorporated into the adventure game. Even when we were doing Shannara for Legend Entertainment, we put role-playing elements into the game because that's the style of game I like. And here we have more of a storytelling game that's almost pure story. But it is all character-driven story, and the parameters of time are there. You only have so much time and so much ability to interact with different characters. You have to make the choices of who you interact with and how you interact and how much you learn about other characters and how much you interact with specific characters. So there's real choices involved in this that weren't there in those other games. Those other games are basically fine. You get the whole story in the same game, effectively.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's no grinding in
Summer Days. There's no create. Yeah. Summer Days has no grinding, but then again, your choices affect how the game progresses. It isn't on rails.
In very meaningful ways. I was really surprised because when I was at PAX, I spun through the demo and then I watched other people and I was like, wait, I didn't get that. Wait, that didn't happen to me. And it's a 10-minute demo. And it was amazing. And it's one of those things where if you play it once, you don't see it. I only discovered that because I watched what other people did and saw how different it was.
Yeah, you don't realize how deep this is or that it is very different.
And this is this expectations thing you always do. Like when I saw the description of it, I'm like, there's no way this is just organizing a party. There's no way. This is the same thing. I'm going to walk into Spielberg with my, famous adventurous correspondence school certificate. This is just a jumping off point, right?
Yeah, and it is much more so in Ifeo's story than Tilly's. Tilly's is more straightforward, and it's all about actually making strong relationships. And there's only so much time to make some really, really strong relationships that affect the future of the other character and you. And so, therefore, it's all about, Tilly's growth pattern, too, because Tilly, is a little like Sean in that she doesn't have a strong sense of responsibility, and she sort of flows through life and takes what life throws at her. And in the course of this, she's going to have to step up and grow and actually help other people on their future too.
And you've been very secretive about Ifeo's arc.
Oh, Ifeo is going to be much more of a, you know, more like a real adventure game. You know, it's going to have a strong story and strong story. They both have strong stories. Mm-hmm. No, it's going to have the world is going to affect Ifeo's story more than the world affects Tilly's story.
Now, you've got a very, very deep lore in the Hero U universe. You took so much time outlining like the story under the story with the founders and the Eldritch horror type monster that's in all the tapestries and everything like that. That, what was the thinking behind having that lurking in the background and slow burning this over game after game after game?
Again, all of my games are sort of like D&D scenarios. I mean, scenarios within a campaign. So I'm running the deep campaign that is underlying Hero University. And so therefore, we're only just hitting in Road to Redemption, you're just touching the idea of what's behind everything and where it's going. And each game, you get a little more of this. Summer Days is a throwback. It's actually takes place just the semester before Road to Redemption. And so therefore, you don't have that as much of the plot line seeming to be there until you get to Ifeo's story. And Ifeo's touches more deeply into the overlying arc that's going to go over this series.
Now, were the similarities to Harry Potter deliberate, or was it just sort of common source material?
I was creating the character of a wizard in a school before Harry Potter was.
That's what I thought, because
and that is why we did Road to Redemption first rather than we did the Wizard's Way game, mm-hmm. because we were going to do Wizard's Way, which was a female wizard at a school which taught magic.
And so you've got this second like full sequel pretty much ready to go.
It was written before we did. I mean, at least the concepts and the characters were all written before we did Road to Redemption.
And then Harry Potter happened and you're like,
meh. Well, Harry Potter happened and that was one of the reasons why we didn't do it. And, you know, it's the idea of we were doing something totally different. But what would be easier for the player coming in to relate to? And the vote was that having a female wizard in a school might be a little more jarring than having a rogue character in a school.
Just too much to throw at the player at once?
Precisely.
Yeah.
Now, there wasn't enough of the past that they could recognize, that they could say, oh yeah, this is kind of like Quest for Glory. Whereas a rogue character, most people played rogues at one time or another.
Yeah, you don't have to learn a magic system on top of the sort of social system on top of the lore system. Okay.
Well, it would feel like, yes, this must be a Quest for Glory game. And it was easy. And it wouldn't be, oh, this looks like Harry Potter. Yeah, right. No. I didn't want that to be the thing they latched onto.
That's interesting, because I would think that's an access point for new players who didn't know Quest for Glory. I kind of thought that was, it was almost, despite yourself doing the sort of same thing, it was something so familiar, and yet then the deeper you go, the more kind of very different it is.
Yeah, and then there was, I kind of got overwritten with this. I would have gone with my Wizard's Way, but the other members of my team, my husband, my son, and several other people, really thought the rogue game would sounded more exciting.
That's interesting.
Ergo, we went with the rogue game first, and that's fine, because it means that Wizard's Way will be even more rich.
Well, and you're going to get, you're building a new player base. those people that have moved
on. We're building the world. Right. I knew that Wizards Way is going to be much more serious in terms of the way the world is affecting the school.
Right.
And so therefore, it makes sense to do the lighter weight first and build out to it. So it all works out. It all makes perfect sense in retrospect.
Yeah, well, you definitely set up like a 4 or 5 game plus arc with Road to Redemption. There's a lot of hints about what's to come there if you explore. I mean, I'm one of those people that has to go everywhere.
Yeah.
Now, with the experiment that is Summer Days, an intent I see is trying to get new people to jump on. Is that correct?
Well, that's part of it. Part of it is that it is a style of game that is, faster and cheaper to produce.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, it was going to give us a chance to check to see whether it is even profitable to do games.
That's interesting. Like full games.
Yeah, full games. Yeah. It was very expensive to create Road to Redemption.
Right.
We are the people that are financing it, it's not easy.
No, why did you decide to go that way instead of like venture capital or anything like that?
We started to do it. We looked into venture capital. We looked into other ways and publishers and everything else. And it was the thought that they're taking 50% of the profits off the top.
Okay.
And it's like, we wouldn't make any money off of it. What was the point of us making our own games if we don't get any money from it?
So it was purely a financial consideration, not the they're going to want creative control?
To an extent, creative control, well, it depends on the company, of course. We've had companies have strong creative control that interfered with what we were doing, and we've mostly had the laissez-faire style. And it's very frustrating when you get the authoritarian type.
Yeah, because I couldn't see any modern publisher letting you do what you did with Hero U. It was just too ambitious to be indie, and yet there was nothing like it in the, AAA light space.
Yeah, so it was really the fact that we didn't wanted to actually, make a game that we could get some money from. It was purely monetary was the consideration, and the fact that couldn't be anybody that really wanted to do our game anyway.
Because it was light or because it featured kids?
I think it more because it's just not what other people are doing.
Because it was an adventure game.
Yeah. And because it didn't fit the mold of what people's preconception of what a game should be.
That's really interesting, because in the intervening time since you've crowdfunded that game, that was back in 2012 that you started Rogue Redemption, correct?
Yeah.
Adventure gaming is really starting to have a revival. You're seeing more and more games of this type, especially with the boom in, whatever you want to call it, visual novels, graphic adventures, stuff like Dream Daddy, what's the other, Had a Full Boyfriend?
Yeah.
Stuff like that. It's legitimized again.
Yes, and the fact that Dream Daddy made money.
Right.
Made the difference.
Now, there was an obvious hook to that. Mm-hmm.
Had a Full Boyfriend and things like that had been, those kind of games had been around in Japan for a long time, but they really weren't hitting the American public, and they certainly weren't being played on everywhere on YouTube.
Yeah, they kind of jumped by accident because of that sort of lull in Nintendo. Mm-hmm. That allowed the sort of portable, like handheld gaming experience to take hold again. And not only the Japanese adventure games and visual novels, but, one of my loves, turn-based strategy games with Fire Emblem, had this huge surge, almost as if American consumers were bored and were looking for something different.
Yeah, and it was like right time, right place.
Right.
Certainly with Dream Daddy and that, because who would have thought that a game about gay, you know, dating gay guys would have such an appeal? But it had an appeal because it was visually attractive.
Right.
It was different.
Yeah.
And it was well done. All of those things had to come together for that to be a success.
Well, what I thought was interesting about Dream Daddy is the scope of what was considered attractive in that game. That, you know, they weren't all quote unquote conventionally attractive, you know, ideal. And that was what was refreshing for me. It's like, yeah, I don't like that traditional, like hard bodied, the character in Summer Days you're supposed to hate kind of character. I like the dads with the dad bods.
Yeah.
They were more
like this corgi.
He was one with the corgi. But yes. They just seem more like people who had some depth to them.
And they had children and they had lives. And you felt like these were real interesting people. So all of those things made that game very, very appealing.
Now, how much of a dating element is going to be in Summer Days? I didn't really get the sense that was a huge component.
Initially, it was going to be. And we backed off of that because partially because of, you know, we didn't want the Dream Daddy association that this is all about dating and it's all about finding somebody and that's all the game. We wanted a real game here. And partially because, you know, we want the player to, you know, make his own relationships. And, you know, it's not like you're dating Muella, who is the Minotaur.
Right.
And even though there were, you know, we made some jokes about it and people said, animalism. Oh, no, 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 no.
But
you do have a good relationship with Muella. You have you can make a very strong relationship with Muella.
Now, Muella is a Minotaur.
Yes.
Paladin.
Yes.
Who is very super nice, but everyone's afraid of her. She's almost like a Looney Tunes character.
Yes. And so therefore, you as a player, if you want to go with, you know, want to develop your relationship with her, you have to get into, you know, a real buddy-buddy comedy situation.
Right.
And so therefore, it's a different relationship.
I'm very interesting about that because one of the things I find with dating in games is the getting to know the person is wonderful. The actual, like, consummation of the relationship is so awkward. Nobody has been able to make that work yet. I feel so detached when it gets to that point. I like in Dragon Age, you get that achievement. I kind of get up and leave the room.
Because
it's just so, the animation isn't there. You know, I'm like, did someone have to mocap this? Like,
yes.
But the getting to know, I mean, one of my favorite relationships in a BioWare game is the, you know, the Claudia Black, you know, witch character, Morrigan, if you don't romance her, if you're just her friend, because you get a completely different side of her because sex is very transactional for her.
Ah, yeah.
And, you know, you get this point where it's like a friend. I've never had a friend before, a very Claudia Black kind of way. And all of a sudden, it's a different paradigm. And so I would like to see games start to, how do I say this? Start to romanticize friendships instead of this, you know, romance being a collectible card sort of scenario.
yes, precisely. And that's like, what we're doing.
Yeah, like literally video games have made romance into collectible cards. You know, no flight to the Witcher, anything with an achievement system does that.
Yes. I could just see it. Yes. No, this is not a collectible card game.
So how do you approach, going back to something you said very, very early on here to kind of bring it in for landing, how do you approach challenge in a game about relationships?
Well, that's one of the biggest challenge every human being ever faces. You know, we have a huge challenge trying to deal with other human beings, because we have to learn to see from their point of view and their side of the story, and we have to learn to listen. And that is a skill that most of us don't start out having.
It's interesting you say that, because there's this whole, you know, neuroatypical autism element to gaming.
Oh yeah.
Is this something you've considered in your design in a game in this regard? Like, will everybody be able to play this? You don't need sort of an intuitive sense of people, because a lot of gamers don't have that.
One of the things that I had at PAX when people were coming by to play our demos and the thing, mm-hmm. was this guy, this nice guy, and his girlfriend or wife came up, and he said he had backed Road to Redemption, mm-hmm. but he had never played it because he has a problem with making choices.
Oh, jeez.
And I thought, oh my God, really? Hero U is all about making choices and having time deadlines and making decisions and things like that. If you have a problem with decisions and time and choices, Road to Redemption is not really the game for you. You're going to be stressed out. And then the other thing I discovered was that from players who played the game was this whole concept of the feeling like they were going to miss out on something. They were constantly in a small anxiety that by making a choice, they were not going to do something else, and they were going to run out of time, or they weren't going to be able to do something. And they were, oh my God, they were getting into stress situations because they were afraid of missing out. And it never occurred to me that kind of reaction to the game. And I had to really stop and think about, and I had to say to that guy at PAX, you know, you will probably enjoy summer days more because there aren't any wrong choices.
Now, this again, from a design perspective, that's the right call in terms of usability for the largest number of people. But if there are no wrong choices, where's the challenge?
Yes, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is to have the ending you want it to, the best possible ending you could get, clearly, because it's you are going to have to make decisions. You are going to choose who, but you can always replay the game, and it isn't that long. I mean, if you had to do that with Road to Redemption, it's a 20-hour game.
Yeah. And that's if you jump a lot of stuff.
Precisely. And then if you need to start over and try to pick up the pieces that you missed, you're investing another 20 hours of the game to play to get to that. And yeah, that's a life, you know. Games don't have to be your life. As much as they
that's
are for
heresy
us.
For some people though. Yeah, but that's interesting. So you're saying there are no wrong choices, but there are. It is a role-playing game. You are attempting to create kind of a synergy between player choice and desired outcome.
There are consequences to every action. There are consequences to your choices, and that does affect the way the story will go. And it does affect what happens at the end of the story, because that's what makes it a game and not a book. But it isn't a wrong thing unless you deliberately do it. I mean, you know, once again, let the player do what they want. If they deliberately want to not do the Harvest Festival and screw around and, you know, just thumb their nose at Turk and that, there are consequences. It is not necessarily good.
Do you think there's an element of this that could actually teach socialization for people who struggle with it?
I think so. Or even if they don't, you know, even if they don't learn how to deal with real people, at least they feel like they're dealing with real people in the game. That's a sense of accomplishment. You know, these aren't just cardboard figures. All of those characters are, you know, have their own past, their own problems, their own worries and fears. Mm-hmm. And by playing the game, you start to uncover and get to see more and more of what the personalities really are, and get to learn how to, you know, that you know, the multidimensionality of characters. So yes, maybe you'll learn the skill of how to do that, or at least be able to apply it to real human beings.
So it sounds like, despite yourself, you've created a 20-hour experience 5 hours at a time.
Yes, it is. And yes, and yeah. Hopefully it is 5 hours at a time. It is not a 20-hour investment. Plus, it is a game that you can pick up and put away.
Right.
It isn't like the book that you can't put down and you have to keep playing. No, it has distinct chapters. It has, you know, a place every evening. Okay, I can just set this down and now I can go on with my life. Until you get so invested in a character, you can't stand it and say, whatever going to happen next, you know, that sort of thing. But still, there's still nice chapter breaks that say, I don't have to play this now. I can relax and do something different.
That's a completely different design philosophy than AAA games do. I mean, I keep saying most AAA because this is AAA design.
Yeah.
The nuance and the thought you're putting into it, the stuff that players interact with without being aware of it. This is AAA level development quality.
We had 20 years ago a conversation with somebody who was working with directly with some Japanese companies that were creating role-playing games and trying to create, you know, their version of WoW. And the concepts he was saying, that there are strict rules to how do you design games in Japan, in that there are a set time period each day that a player will devote to playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like 2 hours after school, after they've done their work, they have 2 hours to do a game.
Mm-hmm.
And in that time, there must be a fulfilling conclusion so that they can feel like they've stopped the game at a good point and then pick it up the next day. So it's very much like a television series that you create a game on so that they can actually play the game and have a good, meaningful experience and then go on with the rest of their life.
It's designed for the realities of Japanese life of
precisely
long work hours and lengthy commutes.
And now there's a different reality of how to play a game in America too, but not everybody can devote their life to playing Road to Redemption. And so it was very much a concept when I started this, is the idea that this can be, first of all, it can be played on, you know, a tablet. If you had a long commute, you could easily play this game and, you know, on a phone and that.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that it doesn't have to be your whole life to try to get to the end of the story. You can be engrossed in the world and not have that anxiety of, oh, what's going to happen next? I can't put this down.
That's fascinating. I'm really curious to see what you do with this game. So you're crowdfunding now. You're
yes.
Kickstarting. You're about halfway to your goal with like 3 weeks to go as we speak, you know, as
33 days to go. Yes.
Yeah. As is when this interview comes out. This is obviously going to be a shorter development cycle than Road to Redemption.
Yes.
Yeah. When do you expect it to come out?
Well, realistically it will probably come out. It's coming out next year. It is not a five year project like our last one. But it will also, Tilly's game will go into beta by the end of this year or so.
Oh, so people who take that backer tier can play it like
yes.
Very soon.
Yes, very soon. The other reason for doing this style game is it's one that I control the vertical and the horizontal more than other games. A lot of this is the style that I can write everything. And once they're, you know, the pieces are put into place, then it's mostly on me, not waiting for anything else. Mm-hmm. We have the artwork. We have most of the art is all done for it.
Oh, yeah, because you're just cycling through certain emotes, right? Like it's
well,
all done.
Yes. And we've been working on it for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, as I said, most of the art's done. It's just how much schedule, how much I can work on it, how much I can concentrate on it to
right.
Get it finished.
Right. Do you and Corey ever fight over favorite characters?
Like, not really. I pretty much, I do most, I do all the writing. So therefore, Corey does the managing. That's right. Why we don't have very many fights on this one.
You have to deal with much more pleasant people than he does, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Right.
So what's final question? What's the holy grail for you? What's the challenge that you haven't tackled yet? That's like your Ahab and the whale. What's your Moby Dick?
Well, honestly, it will be to get this series completed.
Really?
It's going to be very difficult because money is tight. We did not make a whole lot of money off the first game. In fact, we'll be paying it off for a while. And so, therefore, trying to find ways to actually make our games is always going to be the hardest part, because I would love to do these as stressful and as difficult as they are to do it. But reality is that they're ghastly, expensive. And right now, you know, it's hard to find that great audience, that one-time audience that we had at Sierra where everybody played our games. That's not true. There's so many games out there. You can't play everything. And you can't always reach the players who would love to play your games because they never find it or see it.
So what's the best way for old fans, new fans, people who aren't sure they're fans yet? What's the best way to follow you guys?
Oh, well, we are, we're always on Facebook.
Okay.
We're always, you know, we are on all the media and things like that. But the best place to follow us right now is going to be on Kickstarter, because we will be there writing comments and things constantly. We're going to have events all this month to promote our games or promote our things and to give prizes to everybody that listens to us or participates in promoting our games. And we're going to have quite a few live streams during the course of the month.
Yeah, it's every Saturday, and then you're live streaming on Halloween as well, Quest for Glory 4?
Yes. Halloween will be the big one where we go through Quest for Glory 4 in a marathon session. But we're also having a marathon session on the October 5th for playing for the anniversary, the 30th anniversary of Heroes Quest.
Is that the exact day, October 5th?
That is, California Day. If you're in Australia, it's Sunday. Yes, we will be running a game. We'll be playing Heroes Quest while we talk about all the things that are going on and all the past history of making the game, and also have all sorts of contests. We really want to make the players feel like this whole campaign to create Summer Days to Hero at Hero U is a big game that they're part of.
All right, Lori Cole, thank you so much for taking the time. Guys, check out Summer Days at Hero U, check out Hero U Rogue to Redemption, check out Quest for Glory, all the stuff that Cole's done. You won't regret it. The old game still will hold up amazingly well. Lori, thanks so much for your time.
You are more than welcome. It was fun. Thanks.
Become a monthly supporter of the FU Network's groundbreaking programming by going to patreon.com/FU Network TV.